This is the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate, International General Certificate of Secondary Education, November 1990, Examination in English as a Second Language, Paper 4, Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, candidate number, and center number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you are doing the test. If you are worried about anything, put up your hand and ask your teacher. Remember, you must not talk to anyone else. Good luck. The tape should now be stopped and the papers handed out. Now you are all ready. Here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. You will hear each question twice. For each question, you will hear a situation described as it is on your exam paper. Part 1, questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. You will hear each question twice. Question 1. Listen to this hotel receptionist. What is the latest time you can get something to eat?
The hotel coffee shop serves sandwiches and hot snacks from 7 a.m. till midnight. The restaurant is open until 11:30, but last orders are at 11. The hotel coffee shop serves sandwiches and hot snacks from 7 a.m. till midnight. The restaurant is open until 11:30, but last orders are at 11.
Question 2. Tom is at the hairdresser's. What does he ask to have done?
I don't want much off. Could you just wash and trim it? I don't want much off. Could you just wash and trim it?
Question 3. Greta's telling you about her evening class. What does she like best about it?
I'm doing this evening class on psychology. It's quite an interesting subject, and the teacher's great, but some of the other students are a bit silly, to be honest. I'm doing this evening class on psychology. It's quite an interesting subject, and the teacher's great, but some of the other students are a bit silly, to be honest.
Question 4. Paul has telephoned you. What is he going to do tonight?
I'd really like to see you, but what with being ill last week, I'm really behind on my revision, and I've got to do some catching up. I just can't risk a bad mark in the test tomorrow. I'd really like to see you. But what with being ill last week, I'm really behind on my revision, and I've got to do some catching up. I just can't risk a bad mark in the test tomorrow.
Question 5. You hear this announcement at the airport. Who should go to gate 17?
Passengers for flight RU156 to Lagos should now go to the departure lounge via passport control. Passengers with hand baggage only may proceed directly to gate 17 and check in there. Passengers for flight RU156 to Lagos should now go to the departure lounge via passport control. Passengers with hand baggage only may proceed directly to gate 17 and check in there.
Question 6. Lenny is on a bus showing his ticket to the inspector. Why must he pay extra?
This is a student saver return. It isn't valid on intercity expresses. You'll have to pay 10% extra, I'm afraid. This is a student saver return. It isn't valid on intercity expresses. You'll have to pay 10% extra, I'm afraid.
That is the last question in part one. In a moment, you will hear part two. Now look at the questions for part two, exercise one. Part 2, Exercise 1, Questions 7 to 11. Andy is helping his father, who is doing some work on an old cottage. Listen to their telephone conversation and answer the questions by putting a tick in the box next to the correct choice. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hello?
Hi, Andy, it's me. Glad I caught you.
I was just going to leave.
Well, now I've got here, I've realised that I've forgotten some of the things I need.
Typical.
Okay, okay. Now, if I tell you where to look, can you bring them over?
Of course.
Right. First of all, I need the bush saw. We're going to have to cut back some branches in front of the windows.
Which one is the bush saw?
Well, it's hanging on the wall of my workroom. It's quite big, and it looks rather like a bow with a curved frame and a straight blade.
Oh, yes, I think I know the one you mean.
Now, I've also forgotten the paintbrush I use for doing corners of frames and things. It's a flat brush with the bristles cut at an angle, not straight across like a normal brush.
Okay, yes.
And the bottle of paint cleaning fluid. It isn't labelled, I'm afraid.
Dad! After the way you lecture me about safety...
Yeah, well, I meant to, then I forgot. Anyway, it's on a high shelf, and it's quite distinctive, because it's thick, dark plastic, square, with a screw top.
Okay. Is that it?
No. There are a couple more things. One is the new packet of sandpaper. It's the fine grade I want, and that's in a flat rectangular packet just by the brushes. And lastly, I didn't bring any antiseptic. You'll find a little plastic screw top pot on the bathroom windowsill.
I know the one you mean.
Thanks. That's a lot. Do you think you'll be able to manage on your bicycle?
Sure, no probs.
Be careful with the saw. See you in about an hour, I suppose.
I guess so. See you then, Dad.
Cheerio, Andy. And thanks.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hello?
Hi, Andy, it's me. Glad I caught you.
I was just going to leave.
Well, now I've got here, I've realized that I've forgotten some of the things I need.
Typical.
Okay, okay. Now, if I tell you where to look, can you bring them over?
Of course.
Right. First of all, I need the bush saw. We're going to have to cut back some branches in front of the windows.
Which one is the bush saw?
Well, it's hanging on the wall of my workroom. It's quite big, and it looks rather like a bow with a curved frame and a straight blade.
Oh, yes, I think I know the one you mean.
Now, I've also forgotten the paintbrush I use for doing corners of frames and things. It's a flat brush with the bristles cut at an angle, not straight across like a normal brush.
Okay, yes.
And the bottle of paint cleaning fluid. It isn't labelled, I'm afraid.
Dad! After the way you lecture me about safety...
Yeah, well, I meant to, then I forgot. Anyway, it's on a high shelf, and it's quite distinctive, because it's thick, dark plastic, square, with a screw top.
Okay. Is that it?
No. There are a couple more things. One is the new packet of sandpaper. It's the fine grade I want, and that's in a flat rectangular packet just by the brushes. And lastly, I didn't bring any antiseptic. You'll find a little plastic screw-top pot on the bathroom windowsill.
I know the one you mean.
Thanks. That's a lot. Do you think you'll be able to manage on your bicycle?
Sure, no probs.
Be careful with the saw. See you in about an hour, I suppose.
I guess so. See you then, Dad.
Cheerio, Andy. And thanks.
That is the end of exercise one. In a moment, you will hear exercise two. Now look at the questions for exercise two. Exercise 2, questions 12 to 21. Ms. Calvin is a researcher at the Technical Centre in London. She is giving a press conference after a week of extremely cold weather. Complete these notes made by one of the journalists. You will hear the extract from the press conference twice.
Well... thank you all for coming. I know we're all over the country, very worried about the effects of this really bad weather we've had lately. This isn't, in fact, a new problem. We've had 10 bad winters in this country since 1960, and all of them bad enough to cause millions of pounds of damage. The really worrying thing, however... is that the winters of 78-79 and 84-85 caused an alarming rise in deaths among old people. Anyway, it's this recent awful weather that has caused us at the Technical Centre so much concern. The kind of extreme cold we went through last week resulted in dozens of deaths, brought all forms of transport to a complete halt, and caused millions of pounds worth of damage to property. As you know, we had to bring in the army to get food supplies to remote parts of the country. And that just shows how bad it all was. It was, however, very different in countries like the USA or Canada or in Scandinavia. In these places, there was a calm and thoughtful response to the freezing weather. Mainly because they had set up national programs to cope with that kind of thing. Something which, sadly, we haven't done here. The result of this is that we have no organized system for studying the effects of cold weather on transport, buildings, or on people for that matter. The trouble is that while we seem to be very good at knowing when the bad weather will come, we are hopeless when it comes to dealing with the consequences of that bad weather when it does come. If we don't study the effects of bad weather, how can we even think about taking steps to avoid them or lessen their effect? The best example of this is that we don't really encourage people to insulate their homes, with the result that much of the population is simply unable to cope with spells of freezing weather. Our report, which I hope you'll all mention in your papers, says that the increase in the effects of bad weather is simply because of poor planning and a lack of information. Oh, and of course, a lack of coordination among the various groups responsible. And that all of this leads to a lot of unnecessary suffering, as I think I've explained before. What our report says must be done is to set up a group of experts who would all work together to fight this really cold weather when it comes. And only if we do this are we going to reduce the number of deaths we've seen in recent winters. Now, are there any questions I can answer?
Now you will hear the extract again.
Well, thank you all for coming. I know we're all over the country, very worried about the effects of this really bad weather we've had lately. This isn't, in fact, a new problem. We've had 10 bad winters in this country since 1960... and all of them bad enough to cause millions of pounds of damage. The really worrying thing, however, is that the winters of 78-79 and 84-85 caused an alarming rise in deaths among old people. Anyway, it's this recent awful weather that has caused us at the Technical Center so much concern. The kind of extreme cold we went through last week resulted in dozens of deaths, brought all forms of transport to a complete halt, and caused millions of pounds worth of damage to property. As you know, we had to bring in the army to get food supplies to remote parts of the country, and that just shows how bad it all was. It was, however, very different in countries like the USA or Canada or in Scandinavia. In these places, there was a calm and thoughtful response to the freezing weather, mainly because they had set up national programs to cope with that kind of thing, something which, sadly, we haven't done here. The result of this is that we have no organized system for studying the effects of cold weather on transport, buildings, or on people, for that matter. The trouble is that while we seem to be very good at knowing when the bad weather will come, we are hopeless when it comes to dealing with the consequences of that bad weather when it does come. If we don't study the effects of bad weather, how can we even think about taking steps to avoid them or lessen their effect? The best example of this is that we don't really encourage people to insulate their homes, with the result that much of the population is simply unable to cope with spells of freezing weather. Our report, which I hope you'll all mention in your papers, says that the increase in the effects of bad weather is simply because of poor planning and a lack of information. Oh, and of course, a lack of coordination among the various groups responsible. And that all of this leads to a lot of unnecessary suffering, as I think I've explained before. What our report says must be done is to set up a group of experts who would all work together to fight this really cold weather when it comes. And only if we do this are we going to reduce the number of deaths we've seen in recent winters. Now, are there any questions I can answer?
that is the end of part two. In a moment, you will hear part three. Now look at the questions for part three, exercise one. Part 3, Exercise 1, Questions 22 to 27. Mr. Edwards is in charge of the overseas students at his college. In order to get some ideas for a new college handbook for overseas students, he has asked two students, Carlos and Fatima, to come to his office and discuss their experiences. Listen to their conversation and answer the questions below. You will hear the conversation twice.
Look, I think you both know what I'm looking for. I'll be mentioning all the usual stuff in the handbook about finding accommodation, opening a bank account and that kind of thing. But I thought this year I'd try to include the experiences and ideas of some of our students and try and liven things up a bit.
Yes, I think you are right there. The handbook is a bit boring, even though there are lots of useful things in it. Anyway, what would you like us to do?
Well, I thought you could maybe say something about why you came to Britain in the first place.
It seems a long time ago now. Well, I'd like to say that I gave it a lot of thought, but the truth is, I just sort of drifted into it. My father had been to university here, so it seemed the natural thing to do the same. Stupid, really, but at least I knew what I was coming to.
And you, Carlos?
Quite the opposite, really. We wrote hundreds of letters to colleges up and down Britain and spent weeks trying to pick the best one. There was so much choice that probably in the end it was all just a matter of luck. But as to why I came to Britain and not, say, Australia or America, that is really quite easy. I'm just crazy about pop music, and I thought this would be the best place to see and hear all the best singers and musicians.
What about problems when you first arrived?
Yes, it wasn't easy to begin with, although it was probably exactly the same as if I'd gone to college away from home in Spain. Oh, and it took me ages to find suitable accommodation. I think I stayed in six or seven different places before I found one I liked. Still, at least I know my way around the town.
Yes, I'd agree with that. But the real problem is that you have to do so many different things while also trying to make yourself understood in a strange language.
It's true. And on top of all this, the way of teaching in this country is a bit different from home. Before, I had to learn lots and lots of facts, and I knew that at least some of these things will come up in the test at the end. Here, we seem to have to think much more about things and come up with our own ideas. I suppose we learn much more in the end, but it certainly is hard work, especially if you have six subjects.
Yes, it sounds pretty tough.
Actually, I found the hardest thing was getting to know local people. I mean, I knew the people in my class, but they were from all over the world, and, oh, some of my teachers. But what I really wanted to do was to meet British people of my own age and try to learn a bit about their lives.
But why do you think you haven't done that? I mean, is it really your fault, or are the British people just far too reserved to get to know properly?
I don't know, really. People just stick to their own groups, and maybe they're just too shy to talk to foreigners like me.
What about homesickness? I sort of automatically think that this affects all our overseas students. Do you think it does?
Well, there certainly are a lot of miserable people about for the first few weeks. But after a while, things start to improve. It's hard to think about homesickness when you go a physics exam coming up.
But that's exactly why people are homesick. Because they have to work so hard. There's some kind of test almost every week, and if you begin to worry and fall behind with everything, it's then that you start to think of all the friends and family at home. I couldn't stop thinking about my brothers and sisters for the first month or so. And to be honest, I still think about them quite a lot.
Yes, well, I think we'd better change the subject. What about travel around the country? Have you been able to do much?
Not as much as I'd like to, but with the rail card that we have, it is certainly not too expensive. I spent a weekend in Northern Ireland last term. That was really amazing. I had a great time just walking around. Yeah, if you come all the way to Britain and you don't travel around, then you really must be stupid. If I went home and my family found out that I hadn't seen as much of Britain as possible, I think they'll kill me.
I hope it doesn't come to that, Carlos. You've both been very reasonable and polite so far, and far be it from me to discourage that. But are there any things about Britain, apart from the weather and the food, that you just can't stand?
That's actually quite difficult. Well, people here drop a lot of litter everywhere. But it's the same at home, and young people all over the world tend to be a little rude and cheeky. I suppose what I don't like is the way you keep knocking down your lovely old buildings. Couldn't they just be repaired? I don't know, it just seems such a shame.
I hadn't thought too much about that. What I don't really like is when you see mothers or fathers hitting their children if they've been naughty. It's not a thing we do at home, and I hate to see it happening. Apart from that, I think I'd give Britain about 8 out of 10. It's really not at all a bad place.
Well, I wouldn't rate it as highly as that, and I wouldn't like to live here forever. But
I think we'd better stop while we're still ahead. All right, I'll try to get as much of what you've told me into the handbook for next year, and if you can think of anything else that might be useful, we can discuss it in class on Friday. Thanks a lot.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Look, I think you both know what I'm looking for. I'll be mentioning all the usual stuff in the handbook about finding accommodation, opening a bank account and that kind of thing. But I thought this year I'd try to include the experiences and ideas of some of our students and try and liven things up a bit.
Yes, I think you are right there. The handbook is a bit boring, even though there are lots of useful things in it. Anyway, what would you like us to do?
Well, I thought you could maybe say something about why you came to Britain in the first place.
It seems a long time ago now. Well, I'd like to say that I gave it a lot of thought, but the truth is, I just sort of drifted into it. My father had been to university here, so it seemed the natural thing to do the same. Stupid, really, but at least I knew what I was coming to.
And you, Carlos?
Quite the opposite, really. We wrote hundreds of letters to colleges up and down Britain and spent weeks trying to pick the best one. There was so much choice that probably in the end it was all just a matter of luck. But as to why I came to Britain and not, say, Australia or America, that is really quite easy. I'm just crazy about pop music. And I thought this would be the best place to see and hear all the best singers and musicians.
What about problems when you first arrived?
Yes, it wasn't easy to begin with, although it was probably exactly the same as if I'd gone to college away from home in Spain. Oh, and it took me ages to find suitable accommodation. I think I stayed in 6 or 7 different places before I found one I liked. Still, at least I know my way around the town.
Yes, I'd agree with that. But the real problem is that you have to do so many different things while also trying to make yourself understood in a strange language.
It's true. And on top of all this, the way of teaching in this country is a bit different from home. Before, I had to learn lots and lots of facts, and I knew that at least some of these things will come up in the test at the end. Here, we seem to have to think much more about things and come up with our own ideas. I suppose we'll learn much more in the end, but it certainly is hard work, especially if you have six subjects.
Yes, it sounds pretty tough.
Actually, I found the hardest thing was getting to know local people. I mean, I knew the people in my class, but they were from all over the world. And, oh, some of my teachers. But what I really wanted to do was to meet British people of my own age and try to learn a bit about their lives.
But why do you think you haven't done that? I mean, is it really your fault, or are the British people just far too reserved to get to know properly?
I don't know, really. People just stick to their own groups, and maybe they're just too shy to talk to foreigners like me.
What about homesickness? I sort of automatically think that this affects all our overseas students. Do you think it does?
Well, there certainly are a lot of miserable people about for the first few weeks. But after a while, things start to improve. It's hard to think about homesickness when you got a physics exam coming up.
But that's exactly why people are homesick. Because they have to work so hard. There's some kind of test almost every week, and if you begin to worry and fall behind with everything, it's then that you start to think of all the friends and family at home. I couldn't stop thinking about my brothers and sisters for the first month or so. And to be honest, I still think about them quite a lot.
Yes, well, I think we'd better change the subject. What about travel around the country? Have you been able to do much?
Not as much as I like to, but with the rail card that we have, it is certainly not too expensive. I spent a weekend in Northern Ireland last term. That was really amazing. I had a great time just walking around. Yeah, if you come all the way to Britain and you don't travel around, then you really must be stupid. If I went home and my family found out that I hadn't seen as much of Britain as possible, I think they'll kill me.
I hope it doesn't come to that, Carlos. You've both been very reasonable and polite so far, and far be it from me to discourage that. But are there any things about Britain, apart from the weather and the food, that you just can't stand?
That's actually quite difficult. Well, people here drop a lot of litter everywhere. But it's the same at home, and young people all over the world tend to be a little rude and cheeky. I suppose what I don't like is the way you keep knocking down your lovely old buildings. Couldn't they just be repaired? I don't know, it just seems such a shame.
I hadn't thought too much about that. What I don't really like is when you see mothers or fathers hitting their children if they've been naughty. It's not a thing we do at home, and I hate to see it happening. Apart from that, I think I'd give Britain about 8 out of 10. It's really not at all a bad place.
Well, I wouldn't rate it as highly as that. I wouldn't like to live here forever, but
I think we'd better stop while we're still ahead. All right, I'll try to get as much of what you've told me into the handbook for next year, and if you can think of anything else that might be useful, we can discuss it in class on Friday. Thanks a lot.
That is the end of exercise one. In a moment, you will hear exercise two. Now look at the questions for exercise two. Exercise 2, questions 28 to 33. You will hear a radio interview in which a famous pop singer, Daryl Smith, is interviewed by Sid Marsh. Answer the questions in the space provided. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to the Sid Marsh Show. This afternoon, as promised, we have here in the studio a man who has become a legend in his own lifetime. The truly great Daryl Smith. Well, Daryl, I must say it's a real privilege to have you here. I've been a great fan of yours since I was a small boy.
Thank you, Sid. It's nice to be here. I'm not sure if I appreciate your reminding me how old I am, though.
Now, let's get back to the very earliest days. I believe your first manager, Cyril Walker, discovered you and the rest of the band playing at a dance in your hometown.
Yes, he did, Sid, but I think the less said about that creep, the better.
Right. Let's move on to the time when you had your first hit record, That's Why I Love You So. I believe you wrote that yourself, didn't you? Can you tell the listeners what gave you the idea for that song? You know, what inspired you?
Yes, Sid, I suppose I just thought about what my feelings were toward myself.
Ah.
I mean, I just had a serious quarrel with my girlfriend. I was feeling a bit down. Know what I mean?
Yes, I do, Daryl. I do indeed. More's the pity. Now, your next record was in complete contrast to that, wasn't it? Not a love song at all, was it?
Ah, you mean TV dinners. No, it wasn't a love song. You see, I just happened to be in my dinner when I was watching television, and it came to me all of a sudden. I hadn't got any paper with me, but luckily I'd got a tape recorder right next to me, so I just switched off the television and sang the song into the tape recorder.
Amazing. I mean, such a fantastic song coming just like that. You mean you were just watching television and eating your dinner?
Yeah, I suppose it is pretty amazing. Mind you, if you've been blessed with a talent like mine, then perhaps it's not so surprising after all. When I wrote my next hit tune, myself and the band were driving up to Birmingham for a concert, and we got stuck.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to the Sid Marsh Show. This afternoon, as promised, we have here in the studio a man who has become a legend in his own lifetime. The truly great Daryl Smith. Well, Daryl, I must say it's a real privilege to have you here. I've been a great fan of yours since I was a small boy.
Thank you, Sid. It's nice to be here. I'm not sure if I appreciate your reminding me how old I am, though.
Now, let's get back to the very earliest days. I believe your first manager, Cyril Walker, discovered you and the rest of the band playing at a dance in your hometown.
Yes, he did, Sid, but I think the less said about that creep, the better.
Right. Let's move on to the time when you had your first hit record, That's Why I Love You So. I believe you wrote that yourself, didn't you? Can you tell the listeners what gave you the idea for that song? You know, what inspired you?
Yes, Sid, I suppose I just thought about what my feelings were toward myself.
Ah.
I mean, I'd just had a serious quarrel with my girlfriend. I was feeling a bit down. Know what I mean?
Yes, I do, Daryl. I do indeed. More's the pity. Now, your next record was in complete contrast to that, wasn't it? Not a love song at all, was it?
Ah, you mean TV dinners. No, it wasn't a love song. You see, I just happened to be in my dinner when I was watching television, and it came to me all of a sudden. I hadn't got any paper with me, but luckily I'd got a tape recorder right next to me, so I just switched off the television and sang the song into the tape recorder.
Amazing. I mean, such a fantastic song coming just like that. You mean you were just watching television and eating your dinner?
Yeah, I suppose it is pretty amazing. Mind you, if you've been blessed with a talent like mine, then perhaps it's not so surprising after all. But when I wrote my next hit tune, myself and the band were driving up to Birmingham for a concert, and we got stuck.
That is the end of part three and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, candidate number, and center number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, the tape should now be stopped and all the papers collected. Thank you, everyone.